Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Right now on Fast, rally on the street. Stocks surge as inflation pressure eases just a bit. FANG, travel, housing, banks, even a host of the growthy names rocketing higher today. Can the good vibes last? We'll debate that. Plus, Disney popping after hours. A big beat thanks in part to jam-packed theme parks. The company also announcing price hikes for Disney Plus in a mega streaming milestone. We'll go inside the numbers. And later, one of our traders is channeling his inner Kathy Wood. Options action in the energy patch and Elon Musk's $7 billion stock sale. I'm Melissa Lee. This is Fast Money live from the Nasdaq Market Site. On the desk tonight, Guy Adami, Bono and Ice, and Courtney Garcia, and Dan Nathan. We're going to get to those results out of Disney in just a moment, but we start with a rip-roaring rally on Wall Street today. The Nasdaq soaring nearly 3%, posting its highest close since May 4th. The S&P and Dow sharply higher as well. The moves coming after a better-than-expected CPI report showing inflation moderating in July as food and energy prices pulled back. But should one encouraging print be enough to offset, be enough to get our hopes up, I should say? Dan Nathan, what do you say?
I don't think so. I think if we, like, how did the week start? We had this revenue warning by NVIDIA. We had, you know, Micron's warning the next day. I just don't see, like, the fact that we had this print that was a little cooler than expected. I think that was kind of the consensus here. I don't think anyone was thinking it was going to outperform, it was going to be that much hotter. We know that there's been plenty of calls for peak inflation, but what does mid-single digits inflation look like for the balance of the year? It's probably not a great thing for U.S. consumers or for corporate margins. And you think about the S&P 500, and the market did rip. It was broad-based. There's not really much to look at when you think about this rally and say that wasn't a great rally. You think about where we are in August. You think about when the next Fed meeting is. You think about the fact that we could continue to go higher. I'm not a buyer here. I don't think you want to chase this rally here. I think about the S&P 500, though. The high in January, the second trading day of the year, was 4,800. The low was just above 3,600. We are at the exact midpoint at 4,200 right here. Okay, so we're down about 12% on the year. We're up about 15% of the lows. I think you have to think about where rates are, because rates are much higher than where they were, right? And, you know, we go back to March when we started raising. And that's the thing. I think tightening economic conditions, we just had that last guest on the OT just say that mortgage rates where they are, that's going to continue to be a problem. He's been hitting on rents. We have wage inflation. I just think that S&P 500 is not discounting, I think, the back half of the year, that we're going to see a bit of an earnings decline that's going to continue. That's how we started the week, and that's how I want to stick with it.
The word chase in the context of chasing this rally sounds so derogatory, Guy. Isn't this in just enough to allow what we've seen since the June lows continue with the 10-year yield back? I mean, granted, it's much higher than it was, say, a year ago, 2 years ago, but still, it's not 3%. It's 2.7 and change. So isn't that enough to trade this rally?
It's interesting. In one of the Rocky movies, they asked Sylvester Stallone to say something derogatory about Carl Weathers, and he didn't know the meaning of the word, and he said he's great. And so I don't think derogatory is a bad word at all. I think chase is a good thing. You know, you chase the dream, and people are trying to put their money to work ahead of this. Basically, we're talking about Jackson Hole number one, but then the Fed doesn't really talk in earnest until September. So I think what people are saying is, look, there's enough air cover here with this print to sort of be long the market into what's probably going to be still a very hawkish Fed. So I get it. I just think we're overextended here. And I thought that over the last couple weeks. I thought 4,100 was sort of a foregone conclusion in June. But now I think we're getting a little overextended, a little ahead of ourselves. And I think you sell rallies here. Now, people say, look at Disney earnings. We're going to talk about it. That was great. Yeah, I get it. But to Dan's point, you're still seeing warnings out there across a myriad of different sectors. There's still layoffs going on. And, oh, by the way, 8.5 is no panacea. They still have a lot of work to do, they being the Federal Reserve.
Yes. As for today's rally, though, you could really see the risk on tilt when you take a look at the names like an ARK Innovation ETF up by more than 7%. These growthy names, Courtney, and what does that tell you about this rally today?
Yeah, well, and this is where I kind of have to agree here, right? We're getting some warnings here in certain parts of the market, but I think the warnings have been in your growthy names. So I do think that's where, yes, we're seeing this rally come up, but I don't think that's necessarily going to continue over the long run over the second half of this year. I do really like the CPI reading that we saw, right? Especially the fact that core inflation came out down lower, which I think a lot of people were expecting overall CPI to come down. But that core inflation, which is what the Fed is so focused on, I think that coming down is really positive. And pair that with the jobs report we had last Friday, I think does lead us more into this realistic possibility that we could get a soft landing here, but I wouldn't be chasing your growthy names. I still want to make sure that you're focusing on some of the other categories of the market that are much better of a value here, because I think eventually you're going to see those diverge.
Bonwin, I feel like I know in part what you're going to say, that this CPI print, who cares about it? The worst is yet to come when it comes to inflation. The sticky parts are still there. They're going to be stubborn.
I'm going to see if I can thread the needle here, like the Fed is seemingly doing. So I think it's one thing to come on the show and articulate your bearish bent or why you have concerns about the market. I think it's another thing to fail to acknowledge when you actually do have good prints. And I want to stop short of doing that. So I do think the numbers today were good. I will say that when we talk about how effective the Fed is, and you look at rents, and you look at wages, you look at housing, you look at food, some of that is on the demand side, but then you look at energy, and I would argue that that's really not because of what the Fed is doing. That's because of other macroeconomic factors. So it's hard for me to go from logically one step to the next and say this is a direct result of the Fed. As for the rally today, I'll tell you what's particularly concerning. Look at NLCH. I think that thing was down 13% yesterday. It's up 12 today. Look at Coinbase, also led the market higher. Simi's, who gave you the warning, also leading the market higher. So it's one thing we're saying, listen, this is an opportunity for you to pick stocks, pick best in class, those that can deal with adverse situations. This is not that. And then when I'm going to sprinkle in the whole meme stock mania that we've seen this week as well, and it really doesn't feel like people are parting and parceling and making investment decisions. This feels like a liquidity-led risk-on rally at the exact same time where liquidity is being siphoned out of the market. And that's what concerns me.
What if I told you, Dan, that we knew that the Federal Reserve was only going to hike 50 basis points in September? Does that change or alter your view of this rally right now?
I think that's what Fed funds futures are now pricing. That is the highest probability event just at the moment here. So we'd have to see a pickup in really hot data for that to change much to 75 basis points. So again, the Fed said a couple weeks ago they're going to be data dependent here. Here's the data. The market's reacting to that. I think it's a really hard time to kind of put money to work, new money to work in August. I think back to 2020. Do you remember that rally we had? And it was all of that NASDAQ stuff. It was like a melt up. And I think it was like a beta chase. And there was a lot of weird things going on in some of the biggest NASDAQ names. And I think that we have the potential to do that right into Labor Day again. So, if you're trading and you're nimble, like the ARC thing, that thing has been kind of trending up a little bit. It looks like it's about to break out from those mid-March levels or so. I think there's a lot of opportunities if you can kind of pick those sorts of things. I just think that the back half of the year, the economic data probably gets worse before it gets better. I think corporate earnings probably get worse before they get better. And so with the S&P at the midpoint of this 2022 range, it just doesn't look like, as Carter Braxton Worth would say, it's almost like a pair of twos a little bit. You know what I mean?
All right, let's get to Disney. We'll have more on CPI later on in the show. Disney, meantime, shares are rocketing higher after hours on an earnings beat. The company's subscriber growth for streaming jumped past estimates. And for the first time, Disney's got more subscribers than Netflix. The earnings call is underway right now. CNBC's Julia Borson is here to break it down. Julia.
That's right. On the call just now, Disney just said that its Disney Plus subscribers would accelerate in this current quarter and that they don't expect higher prices to impact churn. They also reiterated guidance that Disney Plus will be profitable in fiscal 2024. But they did update guidance for the less profitable Disney Plus Hotstar, saying they expect core Disney Plus to be at between 135 million and 165 million subs by the end of fiscal 2024. That's largely in line with previously provided guidance that didn't break out that part of the business. But the Hotstar subscribers, they're saying, will be up to 80 million. Now, that adds up to total guidance for a range of between 215 and 245 million total Disney Plus
subs by 2024. That total range is below the prior range of 230 to 260 million subs. They say they'll refine that Hotstar piece once some of those other Cricket rights sales are completed. Now, all of this comes as Disney today announced its new ad-supported Disney Plus will launch for $8 a month in December, on the 8th of December. That's the same price as the ad-free streamer is now. They also said that they'll raise prices for the ad-free service to $11 a month from $8 to $11. Now, Disney's better than expected 26% revenue growth in the quarter and its earnings beat that was driven by the Parks, Experiences, and Products division. It showed a 70% increase in revenue and bottom line results that grew by more than six times. That was thanks to an increase in bookings and consumer spending. They said that average daily attendance at the domestic parks was actually slightly below those pre-pandemic levels in 2019, but they have continued to deliver higher revenue and operating income in that division. Now, I will be talking about all of this and more with Disney CEO Bob Chapek in an exclusive interview. That's tomorrow morning at 11:30 a.m. Eastern on Tech Talk. Melissa?
Julie, I wanted to ask you about the Hotstar breakout, because that seems to be, I mean, from the Disney bear camp, that's going to be the nit to pick with these subscriber numbers, that the growth is coming from the less profitable Hotstar. That's where the growth is coming. That's where the average revenue per paid subscriber, monthly paid subscriber, is coming from. And actually, in the U.S. and Canada, that average monthly number has declined.
Well, so just to make it clear, so the Hotstar numbers, those Hotstar subscribers are vastly less profitable for Disney. They are paying a lot less for the service. It's the domestic users and the other users outside of that Hotstar numbers. Those are the users that are most important for Disney's bottom line. What they said here is that those core subscribers, the ones that are paying more, that guidance is still in line. We're still going to hit those numbers. The issue, they said, is looking forward towards 2024, those Hotstar subscribers may be lower than previously anticipated. So the overall pie is on track to be smaller, but a lot of that depends on how much they want to pay for Cricket rights. And Chapek already said on the call that they want to be disciplined in the way they're thinking about sports rights, so not wanting to invest too much in some of those sports rights if they're not going to be profitable for the company. So I think they got a lot of criticism for not being clear about just how many Disney Plus Hotstar subs they were going to have as part of that guidance. So this is trying to give that clarity there. And this new clarity does not seem to be hurting the stock after hours, now up 6.6%.
No, it's certainly not. Julia, thank you. Julia Boorstin, she'll be in on the conference call shortly. We'll keep us updated. Guy, what do you make of these results?
It's a great quarter. There's no two ways around it. I mean, that Parks number, I think, surprised a lot of people. Clearly surprising the stock market, because the stock is trading higher here. But you start doing math. Now, I will tell you, I didn't think Disney should have traded down to 90. I didn't think it was going to trade down to 90. But as you know, Disney's the D in my Dawn trade. And I do think they're deserving of a premium valuation, which they haven't been given over the last 6 months. So you put a 25 multiple, which for Disney is about the historic norm, on the $6 they're going to earn next year. You can do that math, Mel. It's a $150 stock. And I think you're going to start to see analysts raise their numbers. So, again, I think Disney sold off too much. That surprised me. This doesn't. I think it goes higher from here.
All right, let's get more reaction from CNBC contributor Jim Stewart. He's a New York Times columnist who literally wrote the book on Disney. Jim, always good to see you.
Nice to see you, Melissa.
It was a great quarter, but it's losing a lot of money to get these subscribers.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everybody's commenting on the big successes, and they deserve the credit for that. But that loss in Disney Plus is alarming. I mean, the bigger it gets, the more it seems to lose. And that is not a trajectory that can continue. They are projecting a profit for the core Disney Plus in fiscal 2024, which gives them some time. But the spending rate and the revenue lines right now are not pointing in that direction. So I think the big questions are going to be, can they somehow hold down this nuclear arms race spending on content? And how much more revenue can they generate with this new pricing strategy?
Why wouldn't Disney get the same free pass that Netflix had for almost forever in its history?
Well, you know, first of all, it's not a pure streaming business. You know, it's probably counting its blessings. It's got the theme parks coming back, surging like that, which is both good and bad. The theme parks revenue is never going to get a multiple like Netflix has. It's a mature business. It's very predictable, but it's not it doesn't have huge growth potential. Whereas streaming maybe does. And, you know, like Amazon got a pass for years. Netflix is not getting the pass that it did in its heyday recently. I mean, I think that investors are kind of rethinking this. But that's one reason Disney is never going to get that same kind of multiple. Can they get a multiple on the revenue from that? I think they're getting some of that and some benefit from the doubt. But, you know, with these mounting losses and the spending rate the way it is, I think investors are growing a little more concerned about just, you know, how profitable is streaming going to be and when, how soon.
Hi, Jim. Bottom one here. Would you mind speaking to ESPN and the streaming sports offerings and how the pricing in terms of sports rights bodes for Disney going forward?
Yeah, well, that's another cloud over this. And they haven't said much about that yet. And I was a little sorry when they, you know, they changed their reporting method. So they bury, I mean, you can't really see ESPN in there anymore. You can't really, they don't break out the cable network. It's all put together in, you know, the media and entertainment numbers. So it's hard to say what's going on there, but it doesn't look great. I mean, there wasn't big revenue growth in that area. There was some substantial profit growth in the big, you know, media number. But a lot of that probably came from the studio. So it's really kind of hard to say. There seems to be no doubt that the old cable model is in long-term secular decline. And that's a problem for ESPN, which still contributes. Look at the numbers in there. That's still a big, big chunk of the Disney revenue. So do they start to migrate that to streaming? Well, they haven't done it much. And, you know, everybody knows streaming is probably never going to be as profitable for sports as the cable model was. And you've got growing competition there. Everybody wants to get into it. Amazon wants in, Apple wants it. You've got some deep pockets that want to bid for these sporting rights. They're going to face some big cost increases for the big premier sporting events coming up.
What do you think of the ad-supported tier, Jim? I mean, it now enters the fray of streamers who are offering some sort of ad-supported model at a time when advertising revenue in general is slowing. It's just interesting timing, you know, for these things to hit the market as this industry is sort of contracting.
Well, I think they were hoping to be able to introduce this when we weren't on the brink, possibly, of some kind of big slowdown or even a recession. I mean, I think the advertising model is a very, very smart move. It does two things. One, it doesn't really jeopardize the subscribers because they can pay the same and get the advertising thing. So that's not a big price increase for them. And secondly, to the extent they're harvesting all this data, which is supposedly what streaming is supposed to be able to do, they may be able to deliver very sophisticated targeted advertising that could compete with the Googles and the Metas and the Facebooks of the world. So strategically, it makes perfect sense. The timing is not great. I think we're going to see when they introduce this just how price sensitive these streaming services are. I think people are combing through their monthly bills. I did it myself last weekend and realized, oh my God, I've got all this monthly stuff I never look at. And I think people are going to be more cost conscious about that. But I think long term, look, with the cost they've got, as I mentioned, these trajectories, the losses in Disney Plus, they can only do two things. They can either cut costs, which is very hard in this environment, or they've got to increase revenue. And adding an ad-supported tier is one way to increase revenue.
Jim, always great to speak with you. Thank you.
Sure. My pleasure.
Jim Stewart of The New York Times. Courtney, what do you make of Disney here?
Actually, I think Disney, clearly they blew away expectations here, which I think is great. But I do like them from the longer term because I do think they're looking at them. They are expecting that core customer on the subscription side that is going to actually hopefully meet their expectations. And you're comparing that to like a Netflix who just lost subscribers or a Peacock who didn't add any. So I think they have a lot more room to run there. They're also a much better diversified business. When you look at them, they have their advertisers. They have their parks business. I don't think it's a bad thing to look at by any means.
Would you rather, which is a game we haven't played in a while, Disney or Netflix, Dan?
I don't think you chase Disney here. I said that as our final call last night. I wouldn't buy it into things. I didn't say sell it. I said I wouldn't buy it into the print. And I think anytime you have the opportunity to kind of beat those subscriber expectations but then lower the out year, I think that's a good setup and the stock is obviously up. So long-winded answer, right? Are we playing a game? We're
yes,
playing a little bit.
That's why I said to be
I'm not a buyer of Disney at 120 here. I think in a different market, it's probably not trading up $8 on this report. And was it versus Netflix? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Oh, there's a big
thank you for listening to me.
So, So I had bought Netflix a couple months ago, and I just sold it. We're going to get into that later in the show. But there's a big gap in Netflix, and if we are in a squeezy market, look at that chart. There's a gap from that, you know, the disappointment a couple months ago. So. Better trade there.
You didn't know what we were doing. No, you didn't listen to me. You didn't know what the choices were. There were only two choices.
Well, at least I didn't bring back the guests.
Two choices. That's true. Bonneman brought back the guests.
Oh, that is so low.
Sorry about that, buddy. Sorry about that.
Guy, Netflix or Disney?
I'll play the game correctly, Melissa Lee, because we've been together a long time, and I know you're a rule follower and a rule enforcer. I would rather Disney at these levels. Netflix had its run. Disney's about to have its D.I.S., Mel. Hmm.
All right, coming up, Elon Musk hitting the sell button, cashing in on nearly $7 billion worth of Tesla stock. What it means for the Twitter deal next, plus more on today's big CPI print, how the Fed is eyeing the numbers as we close in on their annual meeting in Jackson Hole. Don't go anywhere. More Fast Money right after this.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX. Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close? Or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Elon Musk dumping nearly $7 billion worth of Tesla shares in the last few days, according to an SEC filing. The CEO prepping for the possibility that he'd be forced to buy Twitter. He wrote last night on, what else, Twitter, that in the event that the Twitter forces this deal to close, it would avoid an emergency sale of Tesla stock. Musk said in late April he had no plans to sell more Tesla shares. Obviously, things have changed, namely a court date in October that is pending. Guy, for Tesla investors, I would imagine this is it's a relief. The selling is out of the way. He also said in exchange with somebody who tweeted back at him that he would buy back Tesla shares at some point.
So if the Twitter deal does not close, would you buy back Tesla stock? That's a Twitter thread. Dan knows about this stuff. And his short answer that he gave last night at about 11 o'clock was yes. And I think that gave people a lot of optimism in terms of the stock. And maybe he's being sincere. I have no idea. I'll say this. At $900-ish is where the stock is trading. I think the risk-reward now is, as Carter would say, a pair of two. So I think if you've enjoyed this run from the mid-600s to this price, I think you take the money and run. And listen to what Danny Moses said last night. So I'd be more inclined to sell Tesla here than buy it.
You'd be more inclined. Well, he is selling. I mean, effectively, he is selling. He is short. And he has said that it's been a difficult short. So, Dan, are you?
Yeah, I am. I am short also. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, I think this is an interesting scenario where I think Tesla is one of the most overvalued stocks in the entire stock market. And I think that Elon Musk personally is selling shares of that stock. Good for him. Okay, he still owns a lot of it. But
15%,
to buy the second most overvalued stock in the entire stock market. If he closes on the Twitter deal alone, not through some corporate, with a lot of his equity, he is literally overpaying for this thing, probably by at least 100%. Personally, okay? So to me, I think he probably destroys value in that company before it comes out as something that is able to grow at a point where they're monetizing their users the way that some of their larger competitors are, Facebook, Meta, and that sort of thing. So to me, I just don't like either of them. I don't see it. The fact of the matter is, though, by him doing this, I think he's telling us that he is gonna buy this company because he doesn't want to go to jail if if that's what would happen.
Right.
Yeah, that's actually exactly what I saw, is when he actually sold the Tesla shares. I think that gave more validity to the fact that there is a significant possibility that he could have to buy Twitter, right? Mm-hmm. Which actually is going to help your Twitter shares in the short term. I agree. I think both of these are completely overvalued, so I'm really not chasing either of them. And I think the question is, too, is if he is forced to buy Twitter, is he going to end up selling even additional Twitter shares? I'm sorry, Tesla shares? Because we've seen this in the past where he says, okay, I'm not going to sell anymore. And then here we are, he's selling more shares. So I would just like be cautious about that from a Tesla investment standpoint.
Yeah, bottom line.
Classic situation of believe what I do, not what I say. Guy's not sure. I'm sure that I don't believe a single thing this guy says, to be completely honest with you. I mean, all that this is him hedging his downside risk, selling shares while he still can before he's forced to do it in a fire sale moment. There's nothing else for me to read into it.
I mean, the timing of the trade from a trading perspective, Guy, after Tesla shares have run up more than 30% from July lows and ahead of what could have been a CPI report that could have easily been the other way, especially from the perspective of a guy who feels like he has a super bad feeling about the economy, you know, the timing was pretty good.
Extraordinary, actually. Perhaps we should reach out to Elon and see if he would come on as a panelist on CNBC's Fast Money. Doubt that'll happen. No, I mean, listen, he's done everything extraordinarily well up to this point. But to Bonawin's point, I think, again, now it gets difficult. I think now is going to be the most difficult time he's going to have navigating this Twitter-Tesla situation. So buyer beware at this point, in my opinion.
All right. There's a lot more Fast Money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
Inflation schmation. Stocks rallying on some lighter than expected CPI data. So can the Fed breathe a sigh of relief? Or are more rate hikes on the horizon? Plus, a bundle of energy. Options traders digging into the space and betting there could be some big moves ahead. The details next. You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Let's take another look at how the markets ended today. Stocks soaring across the board with the S&P closing back above 4,200 for the first time since May 4th. That move coming after CPI, consumer prices, flat in July. For more on what the inflation report says about the economy, what it means for the Fed, let's bring in CNBC senior economics reporter Steve Liesman. Steve, nice to see you many, many hours later after the report. But, I mean, basically, the notion is that the Fed can be 50 points in September and wait.
Yeah, that's the way the market's priced. And I must admit, Melissa, you're holding up way better than I am 12 hours after, however many hours after this number came out. The market is buoyant and taking this in a really positive way. Fed officials less so. It's worth pointing out Kashkari out there in the afternoon saying, I'm still on track for a 3.94% funds rate. Evans staying, he's still on track for 3.25%, 3.5%. Look, maybe as Churchill said, this is the end of the beginning. And by that, I mean, several months from now, we may decide that this was the month that the Fed was able to start counting and saying it had several months of evidence that inflation was coming down. But that's a risk, and that's not exactly what Fed officials are saying right now. There's a lot of push me pull you. If you look at the list of stuff that went up, food's still up by 1%. We still have strong gains in the housing market that may take some time to come down, and that's a third of the index. Meanwhile, you did have airfares come down. You did have autos come down. Those are the things that, you don't know, maybe that sticker shock that's happening right now as a result of that, people balking. I was fascinated to listen to your conversation, Melissa, and here's what I was thinking about it. You can take a bet here that the Fed is wrong, But the only question is, are you paid for taking that risk? And maybe with the market down as much, you could take a $5 bet here to see the other guy's cards. If you don't have to put the, you know, go all in with all your money here, you know, $5 down to see your cards, maybe that's okay. Maybe it's not that big a bet. But I hear Guy talking and other folks about, well, is the Fed going to be wrong here? If so, and it doesn't cost you very much, and you're paid for that risk, I suppose take it.
The higher the markets go, though, Steve, that bet to take the other side that the Fed is wrong is an even better bet. And that's what we're seeing today. I mean, with every rally in the stock market that we see, it makes the Fed's job a little bit harder, right? I mean, you got to wonder if these Fed officials are trotted out. There's a big rally going on in asset prices. Go talk the markets a little bit, you know, some sense into them.
You know, the Fed is like, what do they do when they're heeling in a sailboat? They're leaning against the heeling of the boat as much as they can. So, you know, you've had a parade of officials last week. I was very busy out there saying what the Fed was saying about the idea that there wasn't much of a pivot. They're still in the 3.25%, 3.5% range. And then I hope you have that chart on the bar chart, guys, that shows the flip. It was 75 at 8:29 this morning for September, and now it's 50. Caution, there's a lot more data to come. You've got another inflation report. Another. There's the 360 on the, it's hard for me to see anyway, but whatever it is, it's in the 360 range, 350 range. And that's where the market's betting right now. And it's more interesting what's happening with the 75% chance, which is now down to about 30% or so, or 40% compared to where it was, a 65 or 70% chance yesterday.
Guy, would you be on that other side of the trade, as Steve says?
No, well, it's interesting. I don't think the Fed is wrong. I actually think that what they've been doing since November is exactly right. I mean, I'm lined up with them. And to your point about the market going higher makes their job more difficult, I would submit in some ways it makes it easier. I think, and again, I'm not suggesting the only thing they watch is the stock market, but the higher the market goes, I think the more flexibility they have, the more runway they have to be more hawkish, if that makes sense. Steve, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so that's sort of like an absolute and relative argument. The Fed absolutely wants financial conditions tightened. I think it's probably hardened if you look at the 2-year, which has been up pretty strongly. It likes that, but really the sweet spot for affecting the economy, for affecting business, is in that 5 and 7 year range where a lot of business finance is done. And when that sort of gets flat or goes down, absolutely financial conditions are loosening, as well as when the market goes up. So on that basis, yeah, I mean, they can be as hawkish as they want when they're leaning against the market guy. But ultimately what they want is they want absolute rates to be higher here in order to tighten financial conditions.
Do you have your guitar packed up, your gear packed up for Jackson Hole, Steve? Because that's around the corner, right? I mean, you're getting ready for it.
Yeah. It's odd you think the guitar comes out. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't. I have a small travel guitar. But obviously going out and playing in Jackson Hole is not the principal purpose of it. We go and the main purpose is to see if I can last longer than the European central bankers in terms of drinking into midnight. That's the key, so that I can get as much out of the European central bankers, who I don't normally get to see as much as the Americans are in bed by like 9 o'clock, as far as I can tell. It's the Europeans that are the most fun, and I've had great relations with the Finnish guys, or the best of all, to find out what's going on in Europe and around the world. But yeah, if you're asking me, am I pointing towards Jackson Hole as an important pivot point? Mm-hmm. I think we'll have a lot more there and understand a lot more about what's going on. And I think the questions that we have are, you know, how much, pardon me, deterioration in the economy do you need to see before you pivot? And how much do you think you're going to have to do for the rest of the year? I think the market's built in, like I said, for the rest of this year, not much gap between the market and the Fed. It's next year where that gap is big. Right. And right now, if I'm not mistaken, the people around that table are starting to think about next year.
Steve, thank you.
Pleasure.
Steve Liesman. All right, so how should we think about the markets going higher and what the Fed needs to do? The byproduct of what the Fed needs to do, theoretically, should be a decline in asset prices. Dan?
Yeah.
It should theoretically be higher unemployment, things like that. But with the higher the stock market goes, the more help corporations get. They get a little bit more buffer here.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think that we're starting to see housing roll over a little bit. Some of the stuff in the employment data under the hood doesn't seem particularly great. We're seeing, because of all of those inflationary pressures that corporates are feeling, we do see peak margin situations. So we're seeing job cuts, if you will. So listen, a higher stock market, I think, is good for everybody, but it doesn't do the thing that they wanted to do. They wanted to bring down asset prices, kind of like deflate some asset bubbles. I don't know if mortgage rates are going to budge a whole heck of a lot anytime soon. So again, you know, I think that August is a really tough month. We have that August 25th, 27th Jackson Hole meeting. And I think that if they don't trot out a lot of these Fed governors and they aren't particularly hawkish, then the market is going to continue to float up. But again, I'm not chasing that sort of thing. There's going to be some really nice trading opportunities in some of these kind of growthier names because they are so beaten up.
Actually, I think the housing is kind of an interesting story here because that's about a third of the CPI, and that's not coming down. That did increase, maybe a little slower than it did last month. But I think that's something that the Fed is really going to try to target because that needs to come down for CPI to come down. And I think that's where, too, you're seeing home builders are actually doing really well here on the idea that maybe rates are going to come down or not be as high. But I think over the longer run, even if they do tamp down that inflation, they bring down housing, they're just kind of pushing this issue down the line because you have, what, over 70 million millennials out there who are all in the stage where they're getting houses. And after the 08-09 crisis, there wasn't enough building. And there's a shortage of like four to six million units of housing. So I think that's going to be a thing where, yes, we might see that come down here in the near term. But as a longer term, I think that actually when you look at like your home builders, that could actually be an interesting opportunity here.
All right. Coming up, an interesting buy from our own Dan Nathan. Shares of this stock down more than 40% this year. But could there be an opportunity here? The beaten down names he's scooping up next. But first, a high energy options trade coming at you. Where's the group heading next? Tony Zhang is bringing us the action when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. The XLE Energy ETF eking out a gain today, still down over 18% from its June high. The move lower, mirroring the drop in oil prices, and one options trader is betting on more volatility ahead for energy. Tony Zhang has the action. Tony.
Yeah, Melissa, a relatively quiet day on the energy front, but one particular trade really stuck out, accounting for nearly 15% of the entire day's volume. Now, XLE has been trading in a bit of range here over the past couple of months, and one trader bought 7,500 contracts of the November 76 straddle, paying $11.10 for that. To put that into context, this is an $8 million bet that energy shares will either be materially higher or materially lower by that November expiration by about 15% just to break even. So one trader is certainly betting on more volatility going forward and for XLE to break out of the current trading range that it's been in for the past 2 months.
All right, Tony, thanks. Tony Zhang. Bonawin, how do you feel about energy?
Yeah, I mean, they're betting 15% of spot, which is pretty aggressive. And this is exactly why the pullback in energy and this latest CPI reading gives me still a little bit of pause. You see the volatility that's still in that complex. And for those reasons, I think we've got to take this step by step rather than extrapolating one data point and trying to make, an entire story based on that.
All right. For more options action, tune into the full show. That's Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. Coming up, Dan is making some moves. That's right. We've been teasing it for 45 minutes now, 43 minutes. Time to finally reveal what Mr. Risk Reversal himself is up to. We got those trades next and later. Investors are checking into shares of Airbnb today. What is behind the jump in this name? The details and more when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Dan Nathan is making some moves in his portfolio and one purchase, Dan, even less left us surprise.
Yeah, you've never heard me say a positive thing about Robinhood. I bought that today, largely because we were sitting on the desk last night and we were looking at Coinbase, who was trading on 10% on a horrible guide and a horrible quarter. There was nothing good that any of us liked about it. Reversed, traded up, and I say to myself, look at this Robinhood thing. It's been flatlining here. I think it's kind of a one-up, maybe maybe one-down sort of scenario if you get that right. Again, in a squeezy market like this. That being said, I spent late spring buying, remember Qs and twos?
Yeah.
QQQ and twos, basically treasuries. Mm-hmm. I'm out of the Qs. I'm out of a bearish trade on yields, okay? I also bought things like PayPal, Netflix, Meta. Things were down like 50, 60, 70%. I'm out of the Netflix. I'm out of the Meta today. I'm still long PayPal. Shop, okay? And I really like Snap here.
Shop is new.
Shopify.
Shopify is new.
That was about a couple weeks ago.
A couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how long do you think, I mean, how long do you think you'd
I mean, listen, some of the returns, you know, I bought Meta a couple weeks ago and it was up 10% in like that, you know. So some of these things are going to move really quickly here. Snap is a longer term thing. I think there's many gaps to be filled there. I think PayPal was down 80% when I bought it. I think that thing is putting in a bottom. The bottom might be in something like that. Shopify was down 80%. I really like that one here. And the hood is a bit more of a trade. If that thing goes from, I don't know, 10.5 to maybe 13 or 14, I'd be out.
Could hood be a trade? Courtney, what do you think?
I'm a lot more cautious on hood here. I think they really need to have better like recurring revenue streams. I think they need to see a lot more people come to their platform right now, and I think we just aren't seeing that. So maybe it's a short-term move.
Yeah.
As a long-term
This has nothing to do with fundamentals. I mean, this is literally the market that we're in. I mean, that's really what it has to do
on a day when you see the meme stocks, and I say that joking, meme stocks rise, ARK Innovation ETF rise so sharply, that's the kind of trade that goes higher. Can you be in that sort of trade, Bonawin?
The only solution is to trade it. I don't think it's like currently investable in this particular market. I understand the setup, though. It is one of those squeezy names that hasn't had the bounce that you've seen of a lot of other names. And I mentioned at the top of the show, Norwegian Cruise Lines and Coinbase. What positive news came out of those? And those were up both double digits today. So I get it. Might as well kind of get in on the trade while you still have an opportunity to do so. But he said it three times. He's trading it. He will be nimble and he'll likely be out. I'm going to call before that $14 level, though.
Okay. What do you say, Guy, about having a long time to sell a rally? You don't have this long to sell. What's that saying? That it's kind of catchy. It's not catchy enough.
It's the great Louise Yamada who took her cue from the great movie This Is Spinal Tap. The longer in space, the greater in outer space, or something like or to that effect. I'm not really sure. Market doesn't give you that much time to buy the lows or sell the highs. And go back and look at Shopify, by the way. We actually talked about this on the show. Remember they had layoffs and the stock traded down. Next day they reported earnings. And the stock actually traded down to 29. Next day it was 33. We said, that is a tell, Melissa Lee. And the stock has been off the races ever since. When it gets to 10 times revenue, you sell it. It'll make it a $60 stock. And by the way, I'm sure we're slow. We are light on time here, but what year was that picture of Dan taken? I mean, can you put that up in the control
2008.
Room?
2008.
That's the most absurd thing I've ever seen. Look at that thing.
So youthful.
Looks like he's in middle school.
So optimistic, bright-eyed, and bushy-tailed.
That was for options action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what, 14, 15?
2008.
Yeah. It's crazy. Coming up, it's a classic case. We got to update that thing. A classic case of pops and drops. One stock higher, one stock lower. We'll bring you the details behind these moves and the trades next. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Check out Airbnb topping the tape today. Shares surging after the company said new rental hosts in the U.S. grew by more than 50% in the second quarter. This despite rising inflation. Guy, this is the A in which trade? Dawn?
In the Dawn trade, which is interesting. The D was obviously Disney today. Yeah. Then we get the A. I mean, maybe Wynn and Neo tomorrow. But I'll say this. It's an expensive stock on valuation. But if you look at analysts, price range is anywhere from 125 to 175. And I think we can rally in this name despite valuation. When you hear things like this, it suggests that Airbnb is going to do well. And look at Booking Holdings recently. That was actually surprisingly good. So stay with Airbnb here, Melms.
And clearly, if the consumer is getting some reprieve from inflation, Bonawin, I mean, we saw travel names across the board go higher today. Do you believe that bounce?
I don't think you chase it. I mean, a lot of air has kind of been taken out of this sale. This is actually one that I own. I've kind of traded around it. So I like the long-term name. But I would not be trying to chase this one for a trade unless you believe in the long-term story. I don't think the consumer is out of the woods by any stretch of the imagination.
All right. And now to a buzzkill, Wendy's getting grilled. Shares falling as much as 5% after the fast food chain reported some disappointing sales numbers. The CEO citing a more strapped consumer as inflation curbed store traffic. The stock closed the day down nearly 2%. Clearly, they feel it from all sides, wage inflation, input costs rising, consumers feeling the pinch of inflation, Courtney. But is this Wendy specific or is this industry wide, do you think?
I guess a little of both, right? Because I think what you're seeing right now, and unfortunately, inflation is affecting more so the lower income household than it is the higher income households. When you have something like a Wendy's, they're going to feel this more than like a Starbucks, for example, who maybe has a higher income consumer, and they're actually seeing the demand is steady. So, no, I don't think it's necessarily industry specific, but if you are looking at your restaurants, you might want to lean towards the ones that are going to be less affected by your lower income household.
Gas prices coming down has got to help this kind of consumer.
No doubt about it. I mean, listen, you know, we're going to debate this for years, the whole transitory thing. And I think if the war in Ukraine hadn't happened the way it did, we wouldn't be talking about the way we are. And I'll just remind, you know, viewers one other thing. What's going on with China and Taiwan, you know, you could have said the same thing about Ukraine and Russia, you know, months before that. We might be, we might find ourselves in a whole host of like different geopolitical messes in just a few months if there's any disruption to the semiconductor supply chain with all their production there in Taiwan. So,
up next, final trades. Welcome back to Fast Money. Let's get another look at some of tonight's earnings movers. Disney still holding on to those strong gains after adding more subscribers than expected to its streaming service, beating on the top and the bottom lines, up by almost 7%. Shares of Sonos, meantime, plunging after the company slashed revenue guidance for the year. The smart speaker maker saying it faced a significantly more challenging macro environment. That stock down 19% and Bumble's down 12%, lowering its forecast, citing competition from Match.com and a $20 million impact from the war in Ukraine. Didn't know they operated there. You always learn something new here. Time for the final trade. Let's go around the horn. Guy Adami.
Since you're starting with me, Mel, it's not lost on me that as gas prices go down in the context of Wendy's and CMG, gas actually goes higher, if you know what I mean. But Oxy, if it's good enough for Warren, it's good enough for me, sister.
Courtney.
I'm going to go XLE here. I don't really think this energy slowdown is going to continue. I think it's a play.
Bonawin.
Stocks has had a nice move, but I'd be fading the semis up here.
Damn.
Yeah, so things that have flatlined in a bad market like this, a squeezy market, so I like Snap here. I also like Hood, obviously.
All right, thank you for watching Fast Money tonight. See you tomorrow morning on Squawk Box. Bad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.